Let's get to our interview. J.C. Sherbert, owner of the Big Spur, part of the 24/7 Sports Network, and he's the host of the Inside Gamecocks podcast and the J.C. and Morgan College Football podcast. You can find the links to all that in the show notes. Let's kick it over to our interview. We're pleased now to be joined by J.C. Sherbert. And of course, Gamecock fans, everybody knows that name. He's the owner of the Big Spur, part of the 24/7 Sports Network, and he's the host of the Inside Gamecocks podcast and the J.C. Morgan College Football podcast. J.C., thanks for joining me. I really do appreciate you.
Hey, Mike, no problem. Glad to jump on with you and be a part of this podcast. I'll tell you, during the summer months when it looked like we weren't may not have SEC football this year and everybody was kind of debating about the pandemic or whatnot, I did a lot of driving around and listened to you guys and some other podcasts that I went to, and you guys kind of got me through it personally. So it's an honor to be here and talking to you about a little Gamecock football.
All right, great. Well, hey, I got to start obviously there with, just talking about the Gamecocks, because I've got some flack here lately. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not a huge fan of Shane Beamer hire. Not that I think it's going to be terrible. Hell, you could be Tennessee right now and have Josh Heupel. I think I'd rather have Shane Beamer and his staff. Josh Heupel can't even get himself a coordinator there, but kind of talk me off the ledge. I don't want to say off the ledge here, but what is the most optimistic part of Shane Beamer running the Gamecock program in your eyes?
It's difficult to evaluate, and I understand from the outside people that are skeptical about any coach that you bring in that isn't known for a great offense or a great defense. You hadn't had the coordinator experience and all that, because you kind of like to point to something, right? You kind of like to look at it and go, well, you know, this is how many yards they put up, or this is how many yards they held this team to. And, you know, that's the reason this person's the head coach. And that doesn't exist with Shane. You got to kind of dig a little bit deeper with the resume, but I've known this guy for a long time. Didn't know he would be back at South Carolina as the head coach, but when he left South Carolina in 2010, I wrote for ESPN.com at the time when I was a national recruiting writer, that this guy would be a future head coach. And I've always known that. Extremely organized, knows sort of how to run a program in the modern era. And I'll tell you, Mike, if you look around, things are changing. There's a lot of coaching hires that have been made the last 5 years that I would have sworn would have never worked out that have. And then that I would have sworn would have worked out that didn't. More so on the didn't end. I mean, you look at Tom Herman at Texas. I would have never thought that wouldn't have worked out. It was a home run. Jim Harbaugh at Michigan hasn't not worked out yet, but you tell me if you didn't expect a little more out of him. Chip Kelly at UCLA. Scott Frost at Nebraska. I mean, Florida's top two during their last coaching search were Chip Kelly and Scott Frost. They both went elsewhere. And then look at who's winning. It's Danny Kicks, Danny Mullen. You know, he's 29-9 for the Gators. And, sometimes it's the guy that's kind of familiar with your place. And sometimes it's the guy that, quite frankly, you know, kind of understands where he's at, because there's a lot of places that maybe try to copy other schools. And I think sometimes when you do that, you end up being a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy, and that diminishes your quality. Certain things work at certain schools, certain things don't. I think it's ridiculous for South Carolina to try to be Alabama or Georgia. I don't think they'll ever be a school that, you know, you can sit there and recruit like Bama and Georgia and run the Saban process and do all that and be successful. I think that's unrealistic. I think South Carolina has to be different. And I think Shane Beamer brings that to the table. He's also an outstanding recruiter. And he's a guy that also recognizes coaching talent. If you could go back in time and look at the better staff Steve Spurrier had, you know, Shane Beamer was responsible for introducing a lot of those coaches to Steve Spurrier. He's just got that big of a Rolodex. And, he's lost a couple of coaches, a couple that he had kept, and a couple that went to Auburn, and a couple went to the NFL. And he's filled them with quality people. And so I think all that makes it a good hire sneaky good hire for the Gamecocks, because I think that, you know, you look at the program and how it just bottomed out this year under Muschamp. There's a lot of healing that has to take place in the locker room. Shane Beamer's been very smart with his off-the-field support staff, from strength coach to a guy named Derek Moore, who he got from Georgia Tech, who is one of the biggest inspirational guys in college football. And to every coach sort of being on the same page of, hey, you know, this is positive energy. You got to get this thing going back in the right direction. And that's kind of what South Carolina needs. Can't guarantee he's going to win. It's a tough job. But I think with the way the East is right now, I still keep waiting for there not to be an opportunity for South Carolina to get back up in that top three. But there is, you know, there's really no reason right now why South Carolina can't compete with Missouri, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Vanderbilt. I mean, that's the bottom line. That's four games every year. And we'll see if they can do it this coming season. Those are all the reasons I think that Shane Beamer was a good hire for South Carolina. I understand, again, the skepticism from the outside, because, like I said, there's nothing you can point to, but, you know, good or bad, really, except, you know, he was assistant head coach to a couple of coaches that are, you know, pretty big time. So, you know, we'll see what happens, but I have a lot of faith in him, just having known him all these years and, you know, understanding exactly what South Carolina as a program right now needs to get back to that point where they're competing with Missouri, Kentucky, Tennessee, because they're not doing it right now.
Now, of all the hires Shane Beamer has made, whether it be a coordinator or assistant or, you know, even someone off the field, which, if there's one hire that's kind of impressed you the most, who would that be?
I would have to go with, you know, and your listeners will recognize this name, Justin Stepp, who was the receivers coach at Arkansas. I mean, this guy was at SMU, got to SMU with Chad Morris. They were in shambles. He goes out and recruits and develops players that go to the NFL or whatever. And you got to find guys at SMU. They're, you know, you're in Texas there, and you got to kind of wait for the other guys. And then at Arkansas, he's at Arkansas for the worst two-year period I think they've ever had when Morris was there. Mm-hmm. And he landed 8 4-star guys. And Justin Stepp is from the state of South Carolina. He's from Columbia. It's kind of a dream for him to come back home. And I think when you look at South Carolina's receiving core as a whole, you know, two things stick out. Number one, there's no reason, given the wide receiver talent that comes out of that state, that South Carolina should be terrible at receiver or as bad as they were last year. And number two, if you want a guy to fix it, it's Justin Stepp. So that's the guy there. Off the field, you know, Derek Moore is probably somebody that people are familiar with. I would just go Google Derek Moore, Georgia Tech motivational speech, and just kind of see what he brings to the table. It's beyond just being a guy that gives a great speech before a game. Lots of people can do that. You know, he really gets in there with the players, works with them one-on-one. These days, Mike, you have to have the complete package, because kids that play ball these days are different. It's a lot different mindset. It's a lot different in terms of how you reach this generation. And Derek Moore is a guy that can help in that regard, which is, you know, I talk about what South Carolina needs. A lot of the mental aspect of it needs to be sort of re-examined and rebuilt, so to speak. And I think, you know, having a guy like Derek there really helps that.
Now, on the latest edition, the National Signing Day breakdown of the Inside the Gamecocks podcast, you did a really good job explaining to fans why, yes, you look at the rankings, South Carolina dead last in the SEC. They had a very small class. Can you give the listeners here on my show just a, you know, a brief breakdown on why South Carolina fans shouldn't be freaking out by that number 14 ranking?
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, they only counted 13 guys, and having, you know, worked from day one at 24/7 Sports and sort of helped with the meetings to design that formula, it does punish you. It punishes you for not having 4-star, 5-star players, and it punishes you for not having a lot of players. In South Carolina, you know, had 13 guys. I don't think they had a 4-star in the class. But what you have to keep in mind is, number one, you know, South Carolina's entire 2020 recruiting class, which was ranked 19th in the country, which is pretty good, all redshirted, and only one guy is left. So all those guys are still there. So what Shane Beamer and his staff did was they focused on the portal and junior college players. So those 10 guys that ended up, the three JUCOs and the 7 portal guys, they're distributed throughout the roster. In other words, there's some seniors, juniors, sophomores, freshmen. So South Carolina doesn't have this uber huge freshman class, which can, you know, screw up your numbers down the road. And so that's in a year where you probably were not going to sign you're going to have to take a lot of gambles with a lot of freshmen. I think it's smart to go in that direction. And so you look at it in case they all don't hit and you don't have a lot of difference makers in this class, it's not like a bulk of your roster down the road. So you're not sitting there going, oh man, you know, when this class gets to be in a leadership role, we're going to be really hurting, because you have that 2020 class all red shirted. You've only lost one. They're all in. So it's almost like, you know, kind of a filler class. And I think that was pretty smart. They had a lot of immediate needs that they were going to have to hit the portal for, especially a wide receiver. They needed a quarterback, needed some depth in the secondary and on the D line. And so, you know, I thought that was kind of a wise move, because, you know, you take the PR hit, because yeah, it's an ugly number. You take it and the optics don't look good. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to be talking about it during the off season. And it's going to be a pretty sexy pick to pick the Gamecocks last, I think, in the East below Vandy. And I think that's probably going to happen, and people are going to point to that class. But, you know, the bottom line is they got help where they needed it, and it's such a small class and it's distributed so, you know, differently throughout the roster, you know, that really down the road, it's not going to kill them in case they don't work out. I think there's some good football players in that class. I think there's some guys that are going to have to develop. I like all the transfers. So we'll see what happens. But certainly that number was ugly, but I don't want to say ugly by design, because nobody really wants it to be, you know, ugly by design. But given the way they approached it, you know, and just the simple math where, you know, those seven guys aren't going to count. I mean, bottom line, they're not going to count. I think that there's a little bit more that meets the eye than just that big ugly number.
Now, I'm glad you referenced the transfers there, because they brought in a ton of them. Is there one or two specifically that you're really anticipating having a major impact on this team next season?
Yeah, Amarian Brown is a slot receiver that I think, to be honest, he's at least as good as Shai Smith, in my opinion, having watched him at Georgia Tech. Probably a little bit different than Shai in terms of straight line breakaway explosive ability. I talked to some folks that coached him at Georgia Tech, and boy, they just raved about the guy. He's from Tampa Jefferson, home of Stephen Garcia. So uh-oh, there's a Gamecock lore there, a connection there, and he's kind of what the Gamecocks need there offensively. I think he's one to watch. And then there's this kid, man, from Delaware. He's a linebacker. His name's Darrell Williams. He's Debo. He calls himself Debo. Well, you look out for this guy, man. His film, you turn it on, and he's not like he's one of these transfers, though, that still has 5 years left, because he went to Delaware, University of Delaware. They canceled their season, and then he transferred. And you look at him, he's Marshawn Lloyd's high school buddy. And so you look at him on film, and you're like, my goodness, this guy's like a heat-sinking missile. And then you see him in the weight room, and he's just all jacked up and, like, enthusiastic about that, and the coaches are raving about him. So if you're looking for a sleeper out there for South Carolina next year, then write the name Debo Williams down at linebacker, because he's probably going to be a guy that at least makes some noise on special teams.
Now, you mentioned Marshawn Lloyd right there. Shane Beamer this week gave a promising update. You know, he didn't necessarily say, you know, he's going to be suited up and going through all the drills this spring, but he kind of indicated that, you know, he should be participating at least as long as his rehab continues to go in the right direction here. So, you know, taking that into consideration, and Kevin Harris having a huge season last year, is it fair to say that South Carolina may have the best 1-2 punch in the SEC at running back next year?
And see, that's a start, you know, and with the type of offense they're going to run, there's going to be a lot of Lincoln Riley influence. And a lot of people think that, you know, you say Lincoln Riley, people are like, oh, come on, man. And what I mean by this is Lincoln Riley influence, like his schemes and his concepts. And if you notice, Oklahoma loves to run. They love to run the football out of their formations and stuff, especially with multiple backs. South Carolina has not only those two guys coming back, they have five starters coming back on the offensive line. They do lose Sadarius Hutcherson up front, but they get Jordan Rhodes, who opted out last year, back, and Jordan started all of 2019. So you got five starters, maybe three people that are seniors on the offensive line. Boy, that's a great start when you talk about those two backs and all that. You got to have a quarterback, obviously, and you got to have some help at receiver, and they got good tight ends and H-backs coming back too. So I think that that's the key. You know, if Shane Beamer and the Gamecocks are going to surprise people this year, if the offense is going to take a step forward statistically and all that this year, you know, that's where it's got to start, in the run game with Marshawn Lloyd and Kevin Harris. And, you know, Kevin Harris is good. Marshawn Lloyd was an elite recruit. You know, and you have to think that that's at least, along with the line coming back, a pretty good start for the Gamecocks.
Now, you referenced the quarterback there. I know it's, you know, so far down the road here, but if you had to make a prediction right now, who's taking that first snap for the Gamecocks? Do you think it's Luke Doty?
Shoot, I don't know. You know, Luke Doty was kind of penciled in, and I like Luke a lot. And, you know, some people watched Luke play last year, those last couple of games. And, yeah, I mean, you know, he's a true freshman. He did some true freshman stuff. You know, don't write him off based on that. But, you know, especially in the passing game, but he's got some wheels to him. He can make all the throws. He's a very, very competitive kid. What you need that moxie out there. But they brought in a guy in the transfer portal that's very, very competitive as well, Jason Brown from St. Francis of PA. I have no idea, Mike, who recruited Chancellor High School in Fredericksburg, Virginia, and missed on Jason Brown and EJ Jenkins, to where they all ended up at St. Francis. You know, I mean, where's Old Dominion? Where's Towson? Where's Maryland for these guys? I mean, I was like, wow. You know, even Virginia Tech, I'm like, whoever was recruit, whoever had that school, man, Old Dominion, you know, they probably need to have a talking to, because I couldn't believe these kids played for St. Francis, PA. And of course, Jenkins is a 6'7", 240-pound receiver who's, if he can adjust to the speed of the SEC game, he can be a freak. But you look at Brown, Brown's kind of like the guys they like in the pros a lot these days, because he's 6'3", he's 230. He's not a dual threat traditional guy where you'd say, yeah, we're going to go run him on zone read and all that. But he can run just enough to get yards, and he's got a really good arm. And so – he's the prototype quarterback that people really like these days. Now, I mentioned that thing before about adjusting to the speed of the SEC. Can he do it? Yeah, and that's going to be the whole question with the two guys from St. Francis, because they're not playing anybody up there. Mm-hmm. Nobody close to who South Carolina's got to play. But I do think that Brown coming in does give Doty some competition, big time, you know, and you don't know who's going to win it, and it's probably going to be good for both of them that there is that type of competition. So that will probably last, I think, into the fall. I think that, you know, and whoever wins, I think Gamecock fans need to get behind him, because we've had a real toxic experience with Gamecock fans and quarterbacks here, from Jake Bentley through the Colin Hill and stuff last year. And then finally into Doty. I think it's time for the Gamecock fans to rally behind whoever gets the quarterback job. And I'm going to say, I don't know which one that will be. I can see scenarios where either one wins.
Now, I wanted to ask you about breakout candidates on South Carolina's roster, maybe a player or two that maybe your casual SEC fan doesn't know, you know, insert players, kind of like a Kevin Harris going into – he just had such a huge year last season. Who's a player or two that comes to your mind that could have that kind of breakout for the Gamecocks next season?
I'm going to go with a guy that plays H-back. Probably it's H-back in this system. He was a tight end previously, named Jaheim Bell. He'll be a redshirt freshman. He's from Valdosta, Georgia. South Carolina beat Oklahoma and Florida on him in recruiting. When he played last year, it looked like he belonged. He had a knee injury that, you know, kept him from really even practicing until like mid to late October. And I think in this system, yeah, he'll be a guy that you go, man, that guy's catching some passes. Where did he come from? That's offensively. you know, on defense, you know, everybody finally heard about J.J. Enagbare last year, and everybody knows about Jordan Burch because he's a five-star guy. But I'm going to go with another defensive end that may not start, but he's going to make some noise. He played really well last year in the situations he was put in, and that's Tonka Hemingway. Tonka Hemingway, number 91, like I said, played really well when he played last year. I think he's ready to take that next step. Now, are they going to start him over Burch and Enagbare? Probably not, but I think you're going to see him make a lot of plays here coming up for the Gamecocks this season.
Now, I don't know why, for whatever reason, maybe it was a Will Muschamp thing, but it seemed like South Carolina always started spring camp so early. They pushed it back this year. Shane Beamer's talked about that. I think that's, you know, the wise decision. You got to implement your system and strength coach and all that. So thoughts on them kind of pushing the spring back, and what's the big storylines you're going to be watching this year with the Gamecocks once they get into spring?
Well, I'll tell you, as far as pushing it back, that's needed. I mean, everybody I talked to, previous staff, current staff, whatever, during the transition, it's like this locker room needs to heal. They need to heal. They need positive reinforcement. They need to get to know this new coaching staff. They need to blend with the new players. I think that's smart to start a little late because, you know, there is a mental and I guess I don't want to say emotional, but social side of it, to where you need to bond with your teammates. And that was a big problem with South Carolina last year. They had a lot of guys that were just kind of doing their own thing. They weren't really playing together as a team for most of the season. And that was unfortunate. And that's why they went 2-8 and there was a coaching change. But so I think that I think as far as like what I'm looking for in the spring is, where is everybody going to play? In other words, like, you know, you look at the receivers and H-backs and tight ends. Okay, well who's really going to play this and who's really going to play that? They have 18 receivers on their roster this spring, 13 scholarship guys. A lot of these guys have done absolutely nothing, whether that's because of injury or other, since they've been at South Carolina. So I'm wondering, are they going to move some guys to the secondary? Also, the new defensive coordinator, Clayton White, he runs a 4-2-5 base defense. It's different than Muschamp's. So he uses like a spur nickel type of guy. So who's going to play that fifth DB spot? You know, under Ellis Johnson, when he was here and they ran a 4-2-5, that was called a spur. And guys like Darian Stewart, Devontae Holloman, and Antonio Allen played that spot. But, you know, some guys use it differently. With some guys, it's like it's just an extra corner, or it's an extra safety, or it's not really quite a safety linebacker or whatever. So I'm curious to see in the secondary who goes where, because honestly, you look and you see like a list of guys in the secondary. They're all DBs, but you don't quite know because they did cross train under Muschamp quite a bit. You know, you don't quite know who's going to be a safety, who's going to be a corner. Torian Gray, the new defensive backs coach, I think is one of the best in the country. And he's going to figure all that out. So that's one thing I'm really looking for, besides things like the quarterback battle mm-hmm. and stuff like that, is where are they going to place some of these guys moving forward? And so who's going to be competing and all that?
Now, another benefit potentially of pushing that spring back is, you know, obviously you're going to have a later spring game. And my understanding is the NCAA dead period runs till April 15th, if I'm not mistaken. And I know you're far more plugged in than just Columbia and South Carolina, very plugged into the recruiting scene all across the country. Who in the hell knows what the NCAA is going to do with this dead period, but are you getting any feedback on whether, you know, if they lift it at the 15th, you know, if they're going to be able to host prospects at a later date than the April 15th?
I mean, yeah, that would be huge, I think. And I don't know if they made this with that in mind, but that would be huge. At least have some prospects on campus. I mean, obviously, I don't think at that point we're going to be in a position to where there's not like a crowd restriction. In other words, they'll limit it to 15,000, just like mm-hmm. they did the regular games. But you know, if you can have guys masked up on the sidelines making visits or whatever, that would be outstanding because it's. You know, that's obviously an advantage to get kids on your campus. South Carolina, you know, they built that big, nice football facility, and they really haven't had a full recruiting cycle to where it mattered. you know, because they opened it sort of late and, you know, to get started on 2020. And then they end up, you know, COVID ends up killing it for 2021. And so it's been kind of a closed building and stuff. So that would be huge for them. And, you know, what I've been hearing, you know, the April 15th thing, I've heard two different things, that they're going to try to do something, in other words, to lift some restrictions from April 15th. That's one school of thought. The other school of thought is it's probably going to go on until June. So don't be surprised if it keeps right on going and they're sitting there, schools are sitting there trying to Zoom recruit, which is, I think, Mike, completely unfair. I think it's awful, you know, because some of these kids are making decisions, you know, based on Zoom. That's like marrying somebody off online dating. I mean, seriously, come on, man. I mean, you know, it's like getting on Match and being like, all right, let's just get married. All right, you know, and I just don't think that's healthy. So, and that's not going to be good for the transfer portal here in a couple of years. So I'm hopeful that they do, you know, allow some common sense, safe visit type of things to occur after April 15th.
All right. Last thing for you, JC, and I'm not going to hold you to this because it's so early and who in the hell knows what's going to happen with spring, and hopefully no one gets injured, but we know players inevitably will. If everything breaks right for the Gamecocks, can you give me, you know, an early record prediction for South Carolina next season? How many wins are you expecting from this team next year?
I think if things break right, South Carolina can get, if you look at their schedule, and it's kind of a good deal because they open with Eastern Illinois. They have a road game at East Carolina, which is going to scare people, but, you know, East Carolina's not all the way back. Then they go to Georgia, and that's not good. But then they got Kentucky at home, Troy at home, at Tennessee, and then Vandy at home. So that's not a brutal type of deal. You know, if you really think about it, they should start 2-0, and Kentucky, Tennessee, toss-ups, they should beat Vandy. They haven't lost to Vandy in a long time. I'm not going to give Vandy that win. They should beat Troy. So the first part of their schedule sets up for a, you know, 5-2 type of start if things go their way. So it's, I think they could get back to 6 wins, get back to a minor bowl, and then get some recruiting classes in. All is not lost. This roster is not as bad as the roster Will Muschamp took over from Steve Spurrier. It may be a roster that mentally doesn't believe it can win, unlike Spurrier's guys who could. But, you know, you look at this roster, you got 17 offensive linemen in the program right now. All are pretty good and athletic. That's an awesome number. You know, you look, you're probably going to be too deep on the defensive line, which is, some schools can't do that with quality guys. The running backs, like you mentioned, there are numbers at linebacker now, numbers at tight end, H-back. I mean, so there are pieces in place there. It just has to come together. And it starts with this, you know, mental recovery type of thing here before they start spring practice. So I don't even think I'm being a homer by saying that I think South Carolina can get back to a bowl next year. I just know the media in this conference, and every year they pick one thing, right? So a few years ago, it was the Gamecocks are going to win East, right? So, and then it was like, well, no, that's not it. So Tennessee's going to be back. You know, that's one thing. And then Missouri, because of their schedule, they're going to go into that game with Georgia undefeated, and they may win the East with Kelly Bryant, right? And that team finished 6-6. Barry Odom got fired. You know, Kentucky was going to be the darlings this year, and they did get to a bowl, and they had a nice season. But did that team compete for the East? I don't know. You know, we still haven't seen Tennessee get back. I mean, there's always these darlings in the East, and I think that won't be South Carolina this year, thankfully, because it was in 2018, and they finished a disappointing 7-6. So, I think that, you know, that'll be a good thing for the Gamecocks. Let somebody else be the darling. But I do think one of the popular takes is going to be South Carolina will finish dead last. And I think they'll use the recruiting ranking without any context to say it. And then the fact Carolina was 2-8 last year to just combine into a they're terrible all that good stuff. I've already seen it. I'm waiting on it, but I'll disagree with that and say I don't think I'd be in a homer saying the Gamecocks can get to a bowl given the schedule.
Well, I think I'm damn guilty of just about everything, all those narratives you just said. So that's a good note to get on out on here.
No, man. No. Because I talked about, but no, that's I'm guilty of it too. I mean, it's not. I'm not. I hate it because no, I looked at the Missouri schedule and said, yeah. I mean, and then they started 4-0, and I was like, yeah. And then Kelly Bryant started, you know, doing Kelly Bryant kind of things, and it was over, you know. And then they lost to Vandy, and it was crazy. You know, and then South Carolina a couple of years ago, I was on that bandwagon as well. I thought they were going to beat Georgia in game two, and they didn't. And that was just that was it. And then I started becoming skeptical with Kentucky this year. I was like, yeah, you know, everybody said this about Missouri last year, and I don't know, you know. So no, don't feel bad. I'm right there with you on some of these narratives. I'm just saying, I guarantee you a narrative will be South Carolina's finishing seventh in the East and dead last in the SEC this year.
All right. Well, he's J.C. Sherbert. Once again, the owner of the Big Spur, the go-to site for South Carolina information. You got to check out the podcast Inside the Gamecocks podcast and the J.C. and Morgan College Football podcast. J.C., thanks again for joining me. I really do appreciate you.
Hey, Mac, it's an honor and certainly always good to be on. And hopefully we'll talk again soon, several times maybe between now and the start of the season.
Sounds great.